Welcome to Grinder Theory Unbound, a podcast about all things Grinder Theory. This podcast is hosted by the Veterans and Families Institute for Military Social Research at Anglia Ruskin University. I am your host, Dr. Nicky van Bechel. In today's inaugural episode, we are listening to a conversation between Dr. Hilary Angwood, who is an Associate Professor in Applied Social Science and Deputy Director of the Veterans and Families Institute for Military Social Research, and Dr. Oliver Thompson, who is an Associate Professor and Doctoral Program Lead at the University College of Osteopathy in London, and who hosts the Words Matter podcast. Hilary and Oliver are discussing the foundations of grounded theory, a topic which should be of importance to all grounded theorists, whether novice or experienced. And therefore, this topic and this conversation is the ideal starting point for a new series of episodes on grounded theory in practice. I had great fun listening to this discussion, and I found it incredibly valuable for developing some of the finer nuances in my grounded theory. Therefore, I hope you will enjoy the same. Have fun.
So, let's start by thinking this through, Oliver. So we're talking about the foundations of grounded theory, and perhaps it's worth thinking about what we mean by the foundations of grounded theory and thinking through why they're actually important in thinking through what grounded theory is, what methodology is, but importantly, why it's important when we're thinking about the research purpose that we're going to inquire into. And maybe it's just to start us off, I've just pulled together this slide together. And it's just a slide of pillars. And for me, these kind of just base the types of things to think about when we're thinking about grounded theory. And I guess for me, any choice of methodology starts with this thing of what your research purpose is and being really clear about what you want to find out about, and in particular, what type of phenomena you want to find out about. Does that make sense to you?
It does, yeah, and I think as we discuss this and thinking about this session, it takes me back to one of my early supervisory sessions, as myself as a PhD student over 10 years ago, when I was kind of wrestling with the different choices of methodology, and I think I'd read about GT or seen GT flash up in a paper. It was pretty well known, but I really had no. So I thought that sounds interesting. I'll do that. That's an easy choice. Without any real sense of the foundations and actually the purpose. And so kind of reflecting on that experience, you know, and I had some great supervisors, and they just forced me, encouraged me, motivated me to really try and own that decision and to just acquire knowledge around the history, the things you've got here, the different variants of GT, the purpose of GT, and then also, but at the same time, learning some of those things like some of that detail about other methodologies, so you can begin to make that decision. And so that's the thing. So when you're in the kind of midst of a doctoral program and making in that decision making about what methodology, you also need to read around a bunch of other methodologies which you're not going to end up using, yeah, to be able to inform that decision. So I think you've got some really interesting kind of prompts here, which will be nice just to go through as a student or researcher. You know, what do I know about the history of GT? What are the variants? What kind of variants might I use? What's the phenomena or process that I'm interested in? And what's the ultimate kind of outcome? So they're really helpful.
I think you used the word there, own that decision. That is so important, isn't it, during this process? It's that thing of if you don't quite believe in it, can you actually defend it?
Yeah.
As such.
Yeah, and someone who's examined a few grounded theory doctoral students now, that's an easy question or a line of inquiry that I'm interested in. How is it that they settled on not just GT, but this particular iteration of grounded theory? What was it that prompted them? Why weren't other variants or other methodologies appropriate? And that gives one a really good indicator of how well read and how well founded the thesis is. So it's really important to have a good sense of a good argument, really, as to why the decision that you made in regards to GT was the appropriate decision for your work.
And I think, I guess from that, and we'll talk about this in a bit, I think, is that reflexivity, that ownership of how we know our stuff and how we develop our understandings of grounded theory. But I think it's also a practical, it's a really practical methodology, isn't it? There's a real doing thing going in here. And maybe as much of what we learn when we're understanding grounded theory is we learn by doing and we learn by applying it.
I completely, and I think we spoke offline, and we're going to get to some methods, and clearly the kind of the techniques and the distinguishing methods are really important to master, whether it's coding, whether it's kind of theoretical sampling, whether it's memorizing. These things are just useful methods and practical methods to engage with. But as we were saying, they don't, you know, they're not theory free, that there's a reason why we do those. And that's why coming back to the history and the underpinning kind of sociology of grounded theory makes them so much more useful and enhances their utility. So knowing the technical methods is really important, but the underlying kind of justification and reasoning makes them even more powerful, I think.
Yeah. And that probably takes us to just to remind ourselves what is the basic premise of grounded theory? And I know most people here will be familiar with this, but it is this idea that it generates a theory or a model that accounts for a pattern of behaviour. It's relevant and problematic for those in that social field. It's a set of methods and it's analytical. And what we're seeking to do is to explain that particular social phenomena of interest. But it's about that thing of patterns of behaviour is grounded in social contexts and not the perspective of the individual actors in that social field. And I don't know about you, Oliver, but at times it's always worth revisiting that original premise, that sort of 1967 type based premise of grounded theory. And I think it's possibly useful for me to start thinking about, is this the most useful theory for me? Can it do what I need it to do for my research purpose?
Yeah. And, thinking about where the early work, Time for Dying, Awareness of Dying, the early work, I think it was Glaser and Strauss, I could be wrong, but that early kind of social work. And you can just imagine them sitting in the hospices just trying to figure out that kind of, end of life care was at the time, and I'm mind reading here what was going on, but clearly just interested in those social dynamics and processes which occurred in that environment. And so it's no surprise that when you look at how popular GT is in relation to educational practice or healthcare practice, you've got practitioners in their work, in their kind of field, just wondering how this is all happening and what's going on socially. So it's an interesting way to look at that.
I guess to understand all of this, I think you're right, to be a fly on the wall at that point in time would have been fascinating, wouldn't it? But to understand grounded theory or any methodology, you have to go back to where it started from, really, don't you, in order to understand how it's developed over time, because all methodologies change over time and should change over time in light with what's going on in that contemporary context at that time. But it's tempting to think that actually we don't have to go right back to the very beginning, because we may well say, the classic thing could be that Barney and Glaser and Strauss, they valued objectivity and words like that. But it's important that we understand what words like that meant in that time period, I guess.
Yeah, and I think it's just, it still comes back to owning the decision that you made. And I think at that kind of level 8 or doctoral level, you really do need to go back to those foundations. And whether or not you need to read all the early texts, or you pick just one, I think that there's room for maneuver there. But I think having a really good sense of where it came from and where it's gone and the different movements within the methodology, again, helps you articulate your position and makes you feel much more, dare I say, comfortable. I don't know if comfortable is the right word, confident perhaps in the decision that you made. So when it is pressure tested at Viva, or any kind of assessment or PGR, then you're able to defend that. And I think it gives a sense of methodological identity that given that methods seem to map across the different methodologies, it does make one kind of feel and embody GT. And that, I think, kind of pans out in some of the ultimate work or theory or paper.
Yeah, I like the idea of sort of that sort of identity and how we identify with that type of grounded theory, if you like. And I guess my next question is, I mean, how deep into these do you think we need to go?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I remember I studied at the University of Brighton and I was based in London, and I was fortunate, you know, you could just order books from the library and they would just end up in your door a few days later. So I got the early work Discovery. I think I somehow got, I skimmed through Awareness or Time for Dying, but I was just interested. You know, I just kind of felt, you know, embark on this methodological journey, and I need to get to the bottom of this. And so I think it's going to vary. I haven't got a kind of recipe answer, but I think it would seem sensible to, given that Discovery was such a seminal text, it really was amongst the first time that really qualitative research had kind of been codified into a methodology rather than just kind of scribbles on a notepad. It was, I think, it's seminal across QOL, not just in GT. So it's an excellent book to begin to engage with. And where you go from there, I think, you know, you can choose, but I'd certainly recommend going back to Discovery.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, the great thing over time is we've got different means to accessing insights into these different texts. So, you know, a couple of things I use is the World Grounded Theory Online Day, and they've got like Bryant speaking and really good speakers. They're just talking about the different types of grounded theory, and using those different resources can help us gain some insight. So, I mean, let's face it, some of these texts are quite dense. But we have to grapple with that denseness in order to make sense of what the premise within that text is telling us.
I think it is, you're quite right, it's a case of just knowing it for the sake of knowing it. But one would argue that knowing those intricacies, those methodological intricacies, influences the outcome, essentially, you won't just develop some superficial description of a social process or world, but a theory with more explanatory power and more richness. So, yes, it's kind of, you're obliged to engage with it, but it might actually have some purpose ultimately in your work in the end. So value there.
Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right there. And of course, I do always advise all PGRs to dip into your Words Matter podcast with the Bergson Mills as well, to bring us right up to date as well. So folks, have a dip into that, whether at the beginning, middle or the end of your journey. It's a super resource. And I think the next thing to think about is, you know, we can grapple with these big texts and start to make sense. But I think the next thing, and it's almost a risk that we leap too quickly from those foundational texts into the world of other literatures, where we'll find a myriad of tables that try to demonstrate the difference between the types or flavors, whichever prefer to use, of what the differences are between them all. And I think these are useful in some sense, but I also think they might be a little bit dangerous, because they quite often throw in words that aren't in those seminal texts, but also the temptation to gloss over these words.
Yeah.
Is really tempting, isn't it?
Yeah. And these tables kind of, including my table at the bottom left, they kind of lack the nuance in a way, and they're simple tools to, at a glance, dichotomize or trichotomize versions of GT. And clearly I think you're right, I think they oversimplify the kind of landscape of GT. And that's what tables are. They always summarize information, but I guess hopefully they would prompt people to dive into the text rather than say, well, that's all there is, I need to know about constructivist GT or Blazarian GT or whatever it might be. So I think it's like anything, these are summary tables which lack sophistication and nuance, but are either a starting point or a point to arrive at once you've read the kind of previous text.
Yeah. And I think maybe they are also something to keep referring back towards as well, and to remind ourselves of what they are. And interesting, you've popped yours there and that's mine above. I just didn't get around to referencing it properly.
Sorry. I didn't do them
do
all.
Do as Oliver does, people. Don't do as I do. Yeah, but yeah, and I remember when I was doing my thesis that this kind of thing was, oh, this is clear, this is decisive. But I actually, it wasn't. And I did have to keep going back to remind myself, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? And what are the meanings that's within what I'm doing? What do those words mean almost? But also when we use, you know, terms, and I read this quite often in papers that are published, Oliver, that people use it, grounded theory is a symbolic interactionist background. And, you know, we know that symbolic interaction is a part in the development of the original grounded theory because of Strauss's background. But we can't just throw that word in without understanding, I guess, what those kind of words mean. And I guess this is another thing to think about when we think about the foundations of grounded theories, how these wider epistemological terms are used as well. So, you know, in this one, we've got, you know, a summary about a purpose, but then we've got other things thrown in there, other words like positivism and symbolic interactionism, and there's probably interpretivism in there as well. And I guess for me, what one of the danger points is when we use these terms lazily and we don't go beyond them and behind them to think actually what informs that word positivism, what informs that term symbolic interaction, what did it mean back then, and what does it mean in relation to the contemporary?
Quite. And I think, you know, I think my relationship with symbolic interaction was, I remember reading, I think I ordered with Amazon around 10 years ago, and somehow I got Bloomer's book and Sharon's book and read around SI. And I think it helped me shape, it just helped me shape my research question. It helped me get a sense of kind of the micro kind of social processes. And so, I think you're right. As we said, what comes with taking on a grounded theory study at, let's say, postgraduate level, is some ownership about some of this underpinning theory. And I think that's what differentiates it from other methodologies or kind of undergraduate work, is to really develop some expertise in both the history and theory around GT. And you can't escape these things. You should certainly be grappling with these notions and how they relate to your research.
I guess that is it. There is no escape from these terms. And do you know what? I think that goes across all research methodologies.
Yeah, of course.
You know, whether ethnography, phenomenology, case study, mixed, we have to understand what the underpinning terms, what the epistemology of those terms are. And then I guess coming back to that very first slide that we came into, the sort of the pillars almost of just how we might think about the foundations of a methodology such as grounded theory. It's that reflexivity, isn't it? It's what it means to you as the individual, and how it makes sense to you and how it makes sense to the particular thing, that purpose that you want to investigate. I'm also just thinking, it's just one thing we did speak about earlier was this idea that, you know, it's really easy to skip these things and to dive straight into methods, ways of doing, of collecting data. But I guess it's that other thing of thinking about, well, what is it about the doing and the collecting of data that makes it specific to grounded theory?
Yeah, I mean, I remember a while ago now, I spoke to a sociologist, David Nichols, who's a physiotherapist by background, but it's a kind of sociologist by current trade. And he says, and he's kind of moving towards post-professionalism and post-qualitative research. And he said something like, methods are the least interesting thing about qualitative research. And I think he's probably right there, that whilst methods are the kind of seemingly most accessible things, you can just learn them, you go to, you know, classes around coding and memo writing. It's really the underpinning theory which informs, underpinning philosophy which informs those methods. So I know we sound like a bit of a broken record here, but mastering or certainly acquiring expertise in the underpinning ideas which inform the methods will not only make the methods easier to acquire, but actually much more purposeful. And you know, coding isn't rocket science, but knowing, but what is rocket science, or not, in fact, it's not rocket science at all, but it's a certainly a challenging process, is to notice, or at least be reflectively aware of what you're noticing around your data and what you're looking to develop and what you're looking to construct. That just, that takes some kind of theoretical kind of leverage to try and get to that.
And I guess it's also that thing of how you're applying that is being unique to grounded theory as well. Yeah. You know, the idea of coding, collected data as you go along, constant comparison, theoretical sensitivity, all those different notions. And they are quite unique to grounded theory, but they are applicable across all methodologies as well in some sense.
So I guess it's just for the constellation, maybe the collection, you know, and it's always hard, isn't it, trying to pick out a defining feature of anything, right? But I think it's probably the mixture of the particular kind of flavor of theory, the particular collection of methods seems to put it, it's like the kind of mixing of a cake, like you mix it up and there you end up with GT. And yes, you can take out, if you take out some ingredients, it looks less like GT. If you put in others, it looks more like GT. So yeah, it's a hard thing to capture, but I think it's probably the combination of both theory and methods and purpose. So this idea of generating theory, which looks to explain kind of variation in kind of the social world or social data, which seems to typify GT over other methodologies, I think.
It is that unique selling point really of it, isn't it? And I think you've actually hit on something really important there in relation to the underpinning reasons or rationalizations of why we use methods as well. And that, this is a subject for another seminar. So put that on the books, people. But I don't think we give that enough thought, because any research is only as good as the data collected and how that data is analyzed, which is only as good as the intentionality and the application and the understanding of that application of the individual researcher themselves. And I guess grounded theory is so unique in a sense because it's constantly ongoing, isn't it? Other methodologies, you can collect some data and have a bit of a pause, or you can collect your data in one batch and then you apply that methodological means of analysis to that data. I guess grounded theory isn't so clear cut like that, because we are constantly collecting data. And within that is that the choices that we make, and some are explicitly made and some are implicitly made, because some things we collect can just appear by opportune and chance.
And having just that reflexive kind of moment to think, you know, that kind of serendipitous or abductive reasoning that just comes about, is just noting that, kind of logging that, being able to kind of make that explicit, and make it indelible through memo writing. That's all part of kind of reflexive GT, right?
Wow. Oliver, we've done a little bit of a whistle-stop tour here. And I think if we just go back to the first slide. you know, I think we've touched on the idea of understanding the history and gaining that your identity as a grounded theory researcher means we have to grapple with that history in order to understand the different types of grounded theory, in order to consider why that might be most applicable, most useful to how you are going to inquire into your phenomena. And I guess from there, we've touched on the bit of the what, and then we've come back to the you, that you as the individual researcher in your reflexive position, as to how you're going to apply and do that grounded theory. And just speaking like that, it's a big ask, isn't it? It's a demanding methodology.
It is. It's such a, it is. I think if we were giving a talk on a phenomenology research interest group, it'd be equally challenging or
ethnography. Oh, for sure.
So I guess maybe what's somewhat and also unique but apparent with GT is the kind of methodological journey and the different variants which have come about, and which might make it kind of potentially more confusing or more daunting. And it's just got a name. I remember when I first saw the name, I thought, God, that sounds hard. The idea of grounded and theory, it all sounds pretty big and not always accessible. But as you rightly pointed out, when you kind of adopt a more kind of pragmatist view, and it is about kind of noticing and doing bits, and particularly in relation to, you know, the professions or education, it seems to fit really well. That kind of analytical method, just, you know, if you're an interested clinician or educator, or you're always kind of analysing your field anyway. So it seems to relate pretty well to GT.
Oliver, we've had a really good chat. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, lovely.
And it just to remind everyone, points of contact. And thank you for your time for this sort of talking head round robin stop of the foundations of grounded theory. And I look forward to seeing what we do next.
Yeah, wonderful. Thanks, Hilary. Speak soon.
See you soon. Everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.
This was Grounded Theory Unbound. If you have any feedback, please get in touch with us using the details in the show notes. Tune back in next month for an episode with two Grounded Theory superstars and their journey to educating the next generation of Grounded Theorists. Thank you very much.